The message today comes from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. Matthew 2, 1 through 11. This is what it says. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him.' After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh." May God add his blessing to the reading of his word. There are many angles from which you can approach the story of the birth of Christ. And the angle that I want to approach it from this morning is the angle of the responses to the birth of Christ. There are three responses that I want you to see in this passage this morning to the birth of Christ. And the amazing thing is that he encountered those same responses throughout his incarnation. He has encountered those same responses throughout history, and he encounters those same responses today. People still respond to Jesus today the same way that they did at his birth. So let's look at three responses to the birth of Jesus Christ. And the first one is the response of animosity. Animosity is represented by King Herod. We read in verses 1 through 3. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi, or wise men from the east, came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Why do you suppose that King Herod was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him when he heard this news? Well, Herod was disturbed because he was the king. And here comes into his kingdom people bearing a message that a baby was born who was destined to be the king of the Jews. It was a threat to his position of power. He no doubt knew about the promised Messiah because he sent to the chief priests and the teachers of the law to find out where the Messiah was to be born. Herod was a murderous old man and insanely jealous, and any kind of rivalry he could not stand. He had murdered his wife. He had murdered his mother-in-law. He had murdered one of his sons, and then he murdered two more of his sons. So he was a murderous old man, and he did not mind murdering those who were nearest to him. So when he became disturbed, the whole city became disturbed because nobody was safe and nothing was sacred when Herod became disturbed. He only wanted to know where the Messiah was to be born so that he could eliminate the threat to his own throne. And we know that he ordered all the baby boys 2 years and under to be killed in Bethlehem in its vicinity so that he could get him. The animosity and the hatred that was expressed by Herod followed Jesus throughout his incarnation and accelerated and finally resulted in his crucifixion. That same animosity is still around today. There is animosity toward Jesus in the government. There's animosity toward Jesus in the courts. There is animosity toward Jesus in the university. There is animosity toward Jesus in the public square. People might tolerate a Jesus as long as they can put another God along beside him and give him equal footing. But people won't tolerate a Jesus who says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. I'm the only way, the only truth, and the only life." People won't tolerate a Jesus who claims to be God. But that is the Jesus that the Magi from the East came to worship. The second response is the response of apathy. Apathy is represented by the chief priests and the scribes and the Pharisees and the people of Israel. Here we have a deputation of wise men from the East in Jerusalem to worship the Messiah. They have traveled from Babylon, probably, which is many hundreds of miles away. And the people of Jerusalem won't even get up and go 5 miles over to Bethlehem. These travelers from afar went up and down the streets of the city of Jerusalem, asking the question, "Where is he that is born the King of the Jews?" And the city of Jerusalem could give them no answer. They were asking, and they could not get a response. Not only could they get no response, but it seems that no one even wanted to know the answer to the question they were asking. It seems like nobody cared. Nobody cared but Herod. And he only cared because he didn't want any rivals to his throne. Isn't it ironic that the Jewish people who should have been looking for their Messiah didn't even bother with the birth of Christ, but these Gentiles from a foreign land, these Gentiles from a distant land, strangers to the covenants of God, sought to come and to acknowledge this King. The scribes and the Pharisees knew where the Messiah was to be born because they quoted the prophecy from Micah for Herod, but they were just not interested. When Herod had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written." Long ago, Micah had written, "But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people." The scribes and Pharisees were so engrossed in their religion that it just didn't matter to them that the Messiah was born. They were indifferent. When I think about indifference, I think about that poem of Stuttered Kennedy. Stuttered Kennedy wrote a poem about apathy. And this is how it goes. "When Jesus came to Golgotha, they hanged him on a tree. They drove great nails through hands and feet and made a Calvary. They crowned him with a crown of thorns. Red were his wounds and deep. For those were crude and cruel days, and human flesh was cheap. When Jesus came to my hometown, they simply passed him by. They never heard a hair of him. They only let him die. For men have grown more tender now. They wouldn't give him pain. They only just passed down the street and left him in the rain. Still Jesus cried, 'Forgive them, for they know not what they do.' And still it rained, the winter rain that drenched him through and through. The crowds went home and left the streets. without a soul to see. And Jesus crouched against a wall and cried for Calvary. Stuttered Kennedy was saying in his poem that he'd rather have the hatred than the indifference. What's worse, outright open-faced animosity or cold, insipid indifference? One is about as bad as the other. Jesus deserved better than that. He deserves warm-hearted adoration, and that is what he received from the Magi. That is what he received from these wise men from the East. Well, the third response is the response of adoration. Adoration is represented by the wise men. The text says in verse 11, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Why did they bow down and worship him? They bowed down and worshipped him because he is worthy. He is the incarnate Son of God. Very God of very God. There's none in all the pages of history that is comparable to our Lord Jesus Christ. Not even one. There's no life like his. There are no words like his. There are no miraculous works like his. Jesus is the great incomparable one. His birth in the stable at Bethlehem was the beginning of his incarnation, but it was not the beginning of him. Matthew quoted part of the prophecy in Micah 5:2, but he only quoted part of it. If you go back there and you read it all, you'll find that it says, "His goings forth, his comings and goings forth have been of old, from everlasting." And in that statement, reference is made to the fact that throughout the whole of the Old Testament period of time, the Son of God has been active. He was active in the creation. He was active in the theophanies. He was in the Garden of Eden. He was the one who met with Abraham. He wrestled with Jacob at Peniel. He was with Joshua. He was with Gideon. He was with Samson and his family. He was with the three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace in Babylon. Throughout the Old Testament, his goings forth have been from of old, even from everlasting. He has been active throughout all eternity. For he is not only the human Son, he is also the divine Son. He is the second person of the eternal Trinity, whose goings forth have been from of old, from everlasting. Charles Lamb, the tremendously gifted English writer, with the company of the most illustrious of the literary men of his age, were together, and they began talking about what they would do if these of the great personalities of the past were to come into their presence. And one of them said, "If Shakespeare were to come into our group, we would all rise to greet him." Another one said, "If Jesus were to come into our presence, we would kneel down before him in worship." That is so true. And when you come to Jesus, you come to him as a subject to a king. Lord Nelson, the great English admiral, always treated his defeated opponents with great kindness and courtesy. After one of his naval victories, a defeated admiral was brought aboard Nelson's ship and onto Nelson's quarterdeck. And knowing Nelson's reputation for courtesy, this defeated admiral wanted to indulge on his courtesy, and so he advanced across the quarterdeck with his hand outstretched to shake his hand as with an equal. And Nelson's hand remained by his side, and he said, "Your sword first, sir, and then your hand." And so it is. Before we can be friends with Christ, we must be subjects of his lordship. Are you one of his subjects? Have you surrendered your sword to Him? Have you recognized Him as the one whose goings forth are from the days of old, even from eternity? May God open our eyes this day to see Him for who He is and to change our hearts so that we can worship Him as He deserves. Amen. And with that, we'll sing our final hymn. It is hymn number 195, Joy to the World. Would you please stand and let's sing stanzas 1 and 4.